Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A full day of football to break down? Let's talk to the pros. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into the Sunday night recap show of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Thank you to the dozens or hundreds or thousands of people joining us here live on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasypros. I am your host, Dan Harris. Find me on Twitter at DanHarris80. With me is Pat Fitzmaurice. Find him on Twitter at Fitz_FF. Pat, it was a pretty exciting day of football. We were talking about an enjoyable day.
It really was, Dan. And who wouldn't be joining us now? Because there's really nothing else going on of any interest whatsoever.
Correct. So. I always feel like I love the people who join us live on the Sunday nights because they're like, you know what? I need to hear more. I need more fantasy football right off the bat. Let's go. Let's keep it going. So welcome to everybody who is joining us here. And again, if you have questions, once in a while, I might put them up on the screen and answer them live here. But anyway, we've got a lot to get into. We always do here. So before we do a couple of housekeeping items, I do not have yet the winner of the September giveaway. We will have that on probably tomorrow is my guess. But in the meantime, I will let you guys know that we are doing another giveaway. Of course, for October, it is a Justin Jefferson signed helmet. You guys know how to enter at this point. You just leave a review for the show on Apple Podcasts or CastBox and then go to fantasypros.com/contest. If you are subscribed to our YouTube channel, you get 3 times the entries. And again, subscribing to our YouTube channel is just good for you to succeed in your fantasy leagues. We do 4 live streams a week. We do a ton of videos. We do all of our podcasts here on there. So again, youtube.com/fantasypros. If you are subscribed and you enter, it's 3 times the entries. And if you want to hear more from me, I don't know why you would, but if you do, I am going to record after we do this, the kickoff, which is a solo pod that I do every weekday morning, drops for you first thing in the morning. And it's just my thoughts. Tomorrow is going to be my 5 biggest takeaways from Sunday. All right, Pat, let's get into it. Let's start with trust or bust because we've got a couple of guys here. They're a little lower end at this point because there are a few performances that I think when I see, I'm like, these are interesting, but I'm not sure what to make of them. Let's start with one of my all-time favorite sort of fantasy guys, and that's Jameson Crowder. Last year, I called him my peanut butter sandwich because it was just like kind of boring. I ate it every single day. I don't know if you know this, Pat. I ate a peanut butter sandwich every single day for 9 years straight for lunch. It's boring. It never really disappointed. It was never the greatest thing I ever ate, but I knew it was going to be there waiting for me. That was kind of Jameson Crowder. This is his first game back. Of course, the Jets win. 9 targets, 7 catches, 61 yards, and a touchdown. Again, once upon a time, he was a guy who was kind of like a wide receiver 3. Do you think Jameson Crowder trust or bust?
All right. First, I have to know, Dan, were you a Jif or a Skippy guy?
Look, I was realistically whatever my wife bought from the grocery store that week. Also, ready for discussing? I told this on the kickoff. People make fun of me. It wasn't peanut butter. It wasn't peanut butter and jelly. It was peanut butter and butter. That was my sandwich. Disgusting, right? Every day for 9 years. Welcome to my insanity. Anyway, Jameson Crowder, what do you got?
I would say, bust. I don't believe this Jets passing game is going to produce consistent enough volume to support multiple receivers. I think Corey Davis is going to be startable every week. I don't think Crowder is going to be. And we've still got Elijah Moore lurking, and a guy who really excited people with his performance in training camp and way back to the mini camps. And I think at some point he's going to factor in a little bit here. Like, yep, the drumbeat about him was just too loud and too consistent over the summer for him to just kind of fizzle out his rookie year, I think. Yep. And, you know, Crowder's a guy who's provided some low level PPR value for a long time. And in the right spot, he can do that. I don't know if this is the right spot for him. I tend to think not.
I definitely think you are correct in that I don't think you're going to be able to rely on him. I do think he's going to help Corey Davis, because I do think that he is going to open things up a little bit more, because he's going to give that other option, as will Moore when Moore comes back. So like you said, I do think it's Davis who is going to be the guy that you can rely on. But I agree with you. Jameson Crowder is a bust. What about Dalton Schultz here? 8 targets, 6 catches, 58 yards with the score. Now, he's still splitting snaps with Blake Jarwin, who also, by the way, caught a touchdown in this game. But he's on the right side of the platoon, as we would say in baseball. Last two games, 15 targets, 12 catches, 138 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Dalton Schultz in a land bereft of reliable options for a tight end, trust or bust.
Trust, in fact, so much, Dan, that I had him in 2 lineups this week.
Wow.
And in one of those games, it was actually my tight end was Schultz and my opponent's was Jarwin. So I got a slight edge in that battle. Okay. But we have seen him get about a 70% snap share through the early part of the season. And as you mentioned, I think the target count is what, 6, 2, 7, and 8. And that's factoring in that the Cowboys have not really had the passing volume we thought they were going to have. They've had a couple of weird kind of game scripts where sort of, you know, the blowout of Philadelphia last week, kind of a comfortable game script where Dak didn't have to throw a lot this week. The tight game against the Chargers where there wasn't a lot of pass volume. So Schultz is getting 6, 7, 8 targets when there aren't that many targets to go around. Eventually, Michael Gallup is going to come back, and that might limit the tight end upside a little bit on this team. We might not see 2 tight ends putting up fantasy viable numbers every week, but you know, we've seen Schultz inch ahead of Jarwin. I think he's kind of a high-end tight end 2 going forward.
Okay, so that is like a massive sea change for you then, right? Like, this is a game that completely changed your line of thinking, because I'm looking at our rest of the season rankings. We were both like completely off on Schultz, like completely off. So this game really made a big difference for you, right?
It kind of has, yeah. This has sort of cemented it in. You know, and it was a kind of a large group of guys in that I have no idea where to put them in the tight end 2 range. Sure. And Schultz was towards the bottom of that. He is going to vault a lot of those guys this week.
Very good. Let's get to our last guy, and that is Randall Cobb for the Packers. 6 targets, 5 catches, 69 yards. 2 touchdowns here. Is this just a product of the fact that MVS was out? And when MVS comes back, it's really not going to matter or what? Trust or bust?
I'd say bust. I do think that it's sort of a product of MVS being out. And we really didn't see Alan Lazard get, he had one long gain. I think that might've been his only target today. We know that Adams is going to feast on targets. We know Tonyan's going to be involved. Aaron Jones has been getting a fair number of targets. I don't think there's enough to go around for another receiver to be trustworthy in lineups. Maybe in the bye weeks, if you're desperate, you could try Cobb in a PPR lineup, but I don't know. I don't see it, Dan. I don't think there are going to be any. The target ceiling is pretty low, so I don't even know about PPR. Like, I don't think you're going to get the 8, 9, 10 target games from Randall Cobb that you got from him way back in his heyday in Green Bay, but that was a long time ago.
Yeah, I agree. Complete bust. I'm not even thinking about him whatsoever, but I did want to know, because I know I've got a lot of people asking about him. at least tonight. All right, let's get to I'm Confused by Your Opinion, Sir. And this happens sometimes, Pat, where I compare our rest of season rankings and I compare who did well today. And your rest of season rankings are much more on point than mine are. So it's slim pickings. So I've got one guy here and it's Chase Edmonds. And it's even like a baby sort of I am confused by your opinion, sir. I had him 23rd rest of season. You had him 30th, which to be fair, I mean, that's like a mid-range flex here. Big game here, 12 carries, 120 yards. He gets 5 targets, 4 catches for 19 yards. Obviously, it was a very, very positive game script where they were able to lean into the run and a couple of big runs late. But I'm confused by your opinion on Chase Edmonds, sir.
I'll mea culpa. That's too low for him. I don't love the fact that James Conner is their goal line back, and we saw Conner score 2 touchdowns today. But it's funny you mentioned the positive game script of the Cardinals having the lead throughout. I almost think in a way the positive game script is actually a negative game script for Conner because he is the, you know, passing down guy and used there and not so much in goal line situations. So like in a neutral or negative script, that is what could actually sort of pump up his usage and get him a high number of targets. And he got a decent number of targets today, just wasn't very efficient with them in the passing game. You know, we saw him break that 50-yard run late.
Right.
Otherwise, he was out carried by James Conner today. But he is clearly the 1A here. Conner's the 1B and the short yardage guy. So I really should have him in running back 2 range and will going forward.
First of all, you're very like accommodating with these sorts of things that you never put up the fight. You're like, it's right. I should probably move up. And to be fair, you're right. Like generally speaking, I think you said Conner, but you meant Edmonds, is that the negative game script generally does favor Edmonds because he factors into the passing game so much. But this one was the fact that they were just kind of running out the clock. It wasn't all Conner. And then he did break the big ones. Other than that, it would have been a poor game for him, right? If he didn't have the giant 50-yard run and then a couple of others after that, it would have been a poor game. But either way, again, his involvement in the passing game just gives him such a high floor at this point that I feel like, kind of borderline RB2 is where I like to put him. Let's get into the games, though, here. And let's start with the Washington football team, 34, and the Falcons, 30. My guy, Logan Thomas, knocked out very early with a hamstring injury. I don't know the severity, but obviously he was ruled out, and it's a soft tissue injury. So it is something that you're going to want to monitor. Meanwhile, Taylor Heinicke throws for 290 yards and 3 touchdown passes. 2 go to Terry McLaurin, just, 13 targets, 6 catches, 123 yards, and the 2 touchdowns. 1 go to J.D. McKissic, a really fun play to watch on that 5 targets, 5 catches, 44 yards with the touchdown. But let's talk about Antonio Gibson here. 14 carries, 63 yards, and the touchdown. 2 targets, catches both of them for 12 yards. This feels a little bit, to me, absent the injury, like Joe Mixon's game on Thursday, which is he doesn't really hurt you, but managers kind of expect more and want more from him. Just what are your general thoughts here on Gibson?
Yeah, you got the touchdown deodorant from him today, and that sort of saved his day. But it's this situation where we're not getting the fulfilling passing game usage we were hoping for. And any of these situations, and we've seen it in a couple of Washington's games this year where they go into the 2-minute offense a lot, mm-hmm. where they are trying to score quickly, like that just totally takes Gibson out of the end of the game. And, really kind of dials down his touch volume. So McKissic comes in and gets all that. Like he gets that usage. And when they go into that 2-minute offense, they are using their back quite a lot. They're running him. They're dumping off passes to him. And it's frustrating to see these drives where McKissic is getting like 5-6 touches you'd love to see Antonio Gibson get. You know, it's not like he couldn't be effective in the 2-minute offense. It's just that they don't use him in the 2-minute offense. And so, but there have been other games like the opener where we barely saw McKissic. So far, I think it's been 4 games, like 2 heavy McKissic games and 2 games where McKissic was basically invisible. So it's very situational, but these aren't situations we can predict based on opponent.
It's really making me mad. I mean, we both had him 14th coming in rest of season. And that's probably where he belongs, but he could be so much more because he has the ability, right, to succeed, obviously, as a pass catcher. So it's very frustrating. But yeah, I mean, look, this type of game, obviously, you know, he does get the touchdown and they all count. So, and other than that, it was 75 total yards and two catches. You can live with that. Doesn't kill you. But yeah, there's so much more left on the table here for Atlanta. Matt Ryan throws for 283 yards and four touchdowns. Three of them go to Cordarrelle Patterson, six targets, three catches, 82 yards. Let's just add in 34 yards rushing for fun. Pat, running back, because he's technically a running back here, but we had him right around the same range in our rest of season rankings. You had him 37th at running back. I had him 33rd. I got a million questions this morning about him. For the most part, he was on the short end of it, right? Like, for the most part, it was like, I get where you're going, but I'm sitting Patterson when these are your really good other options. But realistically, Pat, 37th coming in, where do you think you're going to move him up to in your rest of season rankings?
He's got to be in running back two range somewhere, Dan. I mean, he's doing so much with these targets. And the funny thing is, not only is he becoming this fantasy relevant player who probably should be in your lineup every week.
Yep.
He is just totally taking the air out of the tires of Calvin Ridley, Kyle Pitts, Mike Davis. Like, he is deflating the fantasy value of three guys on that team. It's just the most unpredictable thing. I think no one could have seen this coming. Like, hey, maybe there's a chance that Patterson would be rosterable.
Right.
No, not only is he rosterable, he's startable pretty much every week now, and he's killing the value of three of his teammates.
That's correct. He is absolutely, like, I would not buy into this because it still felt gimmicky the whole time, but it's not gimmicky anymore. This is what their offense is. And yeah, I mean, we can talk about that. Like, Mike Davis, look, he also sort of scores the touchdown, but 13 carries for 14 yards, you know, just two catches for 12 yards. He is what he is at this point. We kind of know, but yeah, like, Ridley sees 13 targets. That's great. I mean, seven catches, fine. 80 yards. Like, okay. You felt like there was a lot more. And Kyle Pitts, nine targets, good, four catches, 50 yards. But still, I mean, obviously, are you still starting Ridley as a wide receiver one? You're still starting Pitts here? I mean, we moved Pitts down last week. We talked about it. Are you moving him down further, or are you leaving him where he is?
I mean, so I don't know if Ridley is going to be a wide receiver one or if Pitts is going to be the mid-range tight end one.
Yep.
But you're still going to start both of these guys for the most part. I mean, yep. I am still probably starting Pitts over Dawson Knox, over over Dalton Schultz. You know, yeah. I mean, as frustrating as it is, he got, you know, another good target count today, and it was just an inefficient day. And, you know, we've seen a few of those, unfortunately, but he is getting the looks. We know he's an explosive athlete who's capable of making big plays. I think they're going to come. We just haven't seen enough of it yet.
It's really frustrating. But yeah, I agree. If you roster Pitts, you're still just starting him because that's what you're going to do. And he looks amazing out there. You see him running. You're like, oh, God, this guy's such an athlete. Get him involved. But you're right. Cordarrelle Patterson taking away all the value. All right. Before we get to the next game, a friend of mine just retired. That's not a joke. I know I joke that I'm an old man, but I'm actually quite youthful. And a friend of mine who is my age just retired because he made a ton of money in cryptocurrency. That's not a joke. He is my age. He is now retired. And it seems like everyone these days is investing in cryptocurrencies. And if you are interested in it, but you don't know where to start, you should check out the Kraken app. With Kraken, you can buy and sell over 50 of the most popular cryptos like Bitcoin and Dogecoin, a ton more, whenever you want, 24/7. It is super easy to get started. All you gotta do is download the app, create your account, and you can be investing in minutes. And look, you want to dip your toes in the water, right? Because, like, take Bitcoin, it's what, $40,000-$50,000 right now at Kraken. You can buy as little as $10 if you want. So find out for yourself why Kraken has been one of the highest rated places to buy crypto in the last 10 years. Visit kraken.com/fantasypros now to learn more, or search Kraken in the App Store. All right, Bills 40, Texans nothing. It's a little tough to draw any conclusions here on the Bills just because it was such a blowout, but Josh Allen, 248 yards and two touchdowns with the pick. He has 41 yards rushing. Both running backs produce. Zach Moss, 14 for 61 on the ground with the score. Devin Singletary, 14 for 79 on the ground, plus a catch for seven. Which running back are you interested in starting going forward?
Yeah, it's funny, Dan, because I think we've been trying to read the tea leaves on who is ahead of whom in this backfield. And, you know, at first, oh, Moss is a healthy scratch in week one. Turns out maybe not such a healthy scratch. But and it seemed like Singletary had taken the lead. Then all of a sudden last week, it seemed like Moss pulled ahead based on the usage. I think it's a mistake to try to discern which of these two is ahead. I don't think anyone's ahead. I think they are effectively even and seen as equals in this backfield by this coaching staff. And so there are going to be some weeks where one or both are viable, other weeks where maybe not, if it's a tougher matchup, if they're going against a team with a really good run defense. But I think you can consider using either of these guys in a running back two spot if you've got a zero running back type of roster construction or a flex spot. But I don't think either of these guys is going to be a dependable week-to-week starter. We know Josh Allen likes to run himself. We saw a little of that again today. I don't think it's an either or here. I think they're pretty much co-equals. And they both have their value, but I don't think it's dependable week-to-week value.
Meanwhile, Stephon Diggs, 10 targets, 7 catches, 114 yards. Emmanuel Sanders continues to produce 6 targets, 5 catches, 74 yards. But you referenced them earlier. We knew it was a good matchup for Dawson Knox. We liked Dawson Knox. Dawson Knox comes through for us in a big way. 8 targets, 5 catches, 37 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So where is he, basically, in your tight end? Is he a tight end 1 going forward?
Kind of on the tight end 1, tight end 2 border, I would say. We'll have to see how that shakes out. I think maybe he will be back end tight end 1 when we look at it this week, because it thins out pretty quickly, especially with not knowing the severity of the Logan Thomas injury yet. Tied to a good quarterback. Surprisingly, there is enough pass volume to keep all of Diggs, Manny Sanders, Cole Beasley, and now a tight end fantasy relevant. So, they don't throw to their backs much, which helps, but Knox looks really good, Dan. Like, he is an athletic dude. Like, he is making plays. It isn't just, everyone else is open, he's throwing to this tight end no one's covering. Like, Knox is actually beating defenders, making good catches, showing burst with the ball in his hands. He looks fantastic.
And really, that's the thing. And I think you mentioned it last week, and I think you referenced Jack Doyle as sort of like Knox is not the catch it and fall down sort of guy, right? Like,
no,
that's the thing.
You
can add stuff, right? And this, look, and to be as fair as possible, like, this is the matchup, right? You go after the Texans right now with your tight ends. Everybody's been so. Meanwhile, by the way, as long as he comes out of this game healthy, pick up Jonnu Smith, pick him back up for next week against the Texans. But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I had him 16th, you had him 17th. My guess is, again, with Logan Thomas or whatever, like, we will move him up slightly here going forward. But yeah, I agree with you. I think he's borderline tight end 1. Somebody who's barely has any ones in its lineup is the Texans here. This was about as bad as we expected here against the very difficult defense, of course, that we knew. But Davis Mills, 11 for 21, 87 yards, 4 picks. The running backs don't do anything. And it's just Brandon Cooks, really. And again, 7 targets, 5 catches, 47 yards. A lot of that was in garbage time, too. Like, he was doing absolutely nothing in the first half. But now you've got a lot of tough matchups here going forward. You got the Patriots, the Colts, the Rams coming up, Miami. How do you feel about Brandon Cooks at this point going forward?
Good enough that he is at least flex worthy. And I, in a strange way, feel better about him today, that if that's like the rock bottom floor on a day where they're offense was just completely non-functional against a very good defense, and he still managed to squeeze out what would it have been in half, like 7.2 half point PPR points. Perfectly acceptable on a bad day. You're like, obviously not excited about that score, but if that's the absolute worst Cooks is going to throw out, I think you take it and you're fine with it. So
yeah,
I do still think he's in like high-end wide receiver 3 range probably.
I mean, they've got nowhere else to go, which has always been the case with him. I agree with you. Like, this is, I don't know whether or not I ranked him with this line in mind, probably a little better, but like, this is not something where I'm like totally outrageously disappointed given the matchup, like given the targets, given the fact that, again, as you mentioned, at 7.2 half PPR points or 9.7 full PPR points, you can live with that for sure.
And with Tredavious White on him for
that's
much of
I mean.
The day too, like maybe the best pure cover corner in the league. And,
absolutely.
To have a not totally disastrous stat line out of that is encouraging in a way.
Yep. All right. Bears 24, Lions 14. The big thing here is the David Montgomery injury. He's going to get an MRI on Monday. Early tests suggest it's just a hyperextended knee. So hopefully that won't be a long-term absence, which is good. He had a huge performance in this one, which we all needed. 23 carries, 106 yards, two touchdowns on the ground. So just monitor his injury, obviously. And we can talk about whether or not Damien Williams on, you know, the waiver wire show, or whatever. But meanwhile, Justin Fields, he's okay. You know, 11 for 17, 209 yards. He throws a pick. Darnell Mooney, 7 targets, 5 catches, and 125 yards. And Allen Robinson catches all three of his targets for 63 yards. I had a lot of questions about Robinson today in the starts it shows here. Opinion on Robinson after this game, Pat, is your opinion better, worse, or the same as it was coming in?
No, oh, it's got to be worse, Dan. Detroit is a matchup you just salivate over. Like, I can't think of a better possible matchup. And for him to draw only three targets and not have that good a day was just disheartening. And the fact that Mooney got more targets, more high value targets. It's I don't know what to tell the Robinson investors right now. It's, you know, seeing their wide receiver one drop into like wide receiver three value.
Yeah. I mean, ballpark it for me here, because we basically had him almost exactly the same rest of season coming in. You had him 25th, I had him 26th at wide receiver. Are we still thinking, is he going to remain a wide receiver three? Let's start with that.
Yes, just barely.
Yeah, I agree. This is like a mid-30s guy at this point, and it's not his fault. We've seen him overcome poor quarterback play in the past, but if he's not going to even get the targets, what are we doing? So, and you're right. Like, this is the matchup. This was the one that we needed, because it doesn't get better than this. And yeah, it just wasn't there. So I am in agreement with you, unfortunately, because I love Robinson. He's one of my favorite players. For the Lions, very weird. It's like a disappointing day for all the guys that fantasy managers were relying on, but a really good day for the guys that nobody cared to start whatsoever. DeAndre Swift, 8 carries, 16 yards on the ground, 6 targets, 4 catches for 33 yards through the air. Any concerns here with Swift with this line?
Not really. The Bears have a pretty good front seven, and he just didn't do as much with the targets and catches that he had so far all season. You know, he got the same, a decent number of targets and catches. He just didn't do a lot with them. Wasn't efficient. Yeah. That hadn't been the story the first 3 weeks. And normally he's pretty dynamic when he gets the ball in those little short passes. So
yeah,
not too worried about him. I still think he is a budding star and, you know, just one kind of setback week.
How about TJ Hockenson? Another sort of back-to-back quiet weeks. Gets the 8 targets, just 4 catches, 42 yards.
Yeah, not too worried here either. Okay. I mean, he is one of the haves at tight end. There aren't many of those, but I think he's still one of the few, the rare tight ends you feel good about putting in your lineup every week.
Yeah, I think that's the deal. Like, I always find it funny to have to talk about this. Like, okay, well, do you want to move him like behind Mark Andrews, or do you just want to leave him there? Because it really, right, there's just not that many guys you can talk about with the tight end. Jamal Williams, okay, 14 for 66 on the ground. No catches. Just a weird game. Quintez Cephas, 5 targets, 4 catches, 83 yards. Amon Ross St. Brown, 8 targets, 6 catches, 70 yards. Khalif Raymond, 3 catches, 46 yards, 2 touchdowns. I assume you're still not interested in a Lions wide receiver, right?
No, like rostering Cephas and St. Brown, maybe, but in a larger league with bigger rosters, maybe. But yeah, you just can't trust these guys. It's just the target distribution is just too scattershot in this offense.
All right, Cowboys 36, Panthers 28. Huge game here from Zeke, 20 carries, 143 yards on the ground with the score, and Tony Pollard, 10 carries, 67 yards, but cedes to Zeke. That's kind of, you know, what we're hoping for here when we see the game line. Meanwhile, Dak, he just doesn't need to do a ton, 14 for 22 for 188 yards, but it does come with 4 touchdowns. Amari Cooper gets one with 69 yards. We talked about Dalton Schultz already. We talked about Blake Jarwin getting his touchdown. And then Cedric Wilson, 2 catches for 30 yards in the score. The bigger question, obviously, is missing from that is CeeDee Lamb. Only 5 targets, 2 catches. 13 yards. Do you have any concerns here with Lamb?
I don't. Just sort of a weird anomaly. I mentioned before that the Dallas passing volume has been dialed down a little bit, and I don't think that's part of their plan. If they can run a lot, they will. Their defense been a little better than expected and has put them not into the shootout scripts yet. I think they're coming, and I think Lamb is going to be just fine. You know, like in the Philadelphia game, we saw him come on and have that acrobatic catch down by the goal line. Doesn't get into the end zone, but it's like this great start. And then it turns into a blowout, and they kind of don't need him in that game. And all of a sudden, he winds up with disappointing numbers. And it was kind of the same way today. They didn't throw that much. He just happened to be the odd man out today, but I'm not worried about him at all. The talent is beyond question. Frustrating for Lamb investors, I'm sure, but there will be better days ahead.
Yeah, and again, that is something to understand if you didn't watch this game. The final score is close. It's a one-score game, but this game was a blowout. Like, the Panthers came back at the end, but Dallas was leading handily pretty much all game. I agree, by the way, no concerns over Lamb. For Carolina, this is so great to see DJ Moore. Again, just I love his talent. 12 targets, 8 catches, 113 yards, and 2 touchdowns. The fact that the touchdowns are coming is just like this wonderful little added bonus that we've all been waiting for. Meanwhile, I mean, Sam Darnold, 301 yards passing, 2 touchdowns. He does throw 2 picks. He also rushes for 2 touchdowns. I mean, is this a QB1 now, Pat, for the rest of the season?
Boy, he is close. And I saw at one point that Cam Darnold was trending on Twitter. running aggressively now. And it's great. I mean, that is really boosting his value. Like, I don't think he could get to QB1 value on passing alone, even though he's in a much better situation and has DJ Moore turning into a full-fledged superstar this year for him. But if you add in some running, his ability to get it into the end zone, like they are calling a lot of these fakes, bootlegs. It's kind of nice that he's doing it. He is very close. I don't think he's going to be in quarterback one for me, that range, Dan, but probably high end quarterback two again.
You know, what's your problem, man? I'm sorry, Pat, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
What's your problem, man? Should have been, if you were the host, what's your problem, man, would have been about me and Sam Darnold rest of the season, because I had him 18th and you have him 14th. So you were much more of a buyer into this. I have seen a lot of Sam Darnold. I like Sam Darnold. I'm rooting for Sam Darnold. But I wanted to see what he looked like here in this matchup. He looked great. And you're right, the rushing. And he's always had the rushing ability. The fact that they're using him again near the goal line, it's really encouraging. I agree, he's just outside of QB1 range. But I will certainly have him moving up, certainly, when I update my rest of season rankings. Chuba Hubbard, 71 total yards. Okay, fills in fine. What about Robbie Anderson? We talk about it every week. 11 targets. Good. 5 catches, 46 yards. Not great. I mean, what are we doing with Robbie Anderson at this point?
I think for now we're sort of hanging on to him. And we talked about this a little last week, how Robbie was maybe boosted last year by the fact that Christian McCaffrey was out of the lineup and he was being used in a different way than he had been used with the Jets, where he was mostly a vertical threat. Last year it was more of a short area role, and maybe he can still have some value while Christian McCaffrey is out in that role. We saw the target bump today, not very efficient with those targets, but, you know, certainly encouraging compared to what we had seen from him with these minuscule 3 target games. So, unfortunately for Robbie, McCaffrey's going to come back at some point, and then you wonder, because like these targets are not going away from DJ Moore. Like, he's just a star now, and I think we're going to have to resign ourselves to this lower volume version of Robbie Anderson.
I mean, that's the thing. He got the volume today, and it still didn't come to fruition, and that's really, that's really a bummer. And again, there were a couple of guys like Allen Robinson and Woods and Robbie Anderson, who I was like, man, and I would talk about it, people, and be like, you know, my heart says that this is going to be a huge day and everything like that. But I cannot rank them that way, because realistically, that's just not how I could possibly project it. And for the most part, they didn't really come through. I mean, Woods scored the touchdown, but for the most part, they didn't really come through. And it's just really disappointing, man, because I do like Robbie Anderson. I had high hopes with Sam Darnold, but yeah, for now, it is not happening. But what is happening is TickPick, because you can go to football games and you can save money both at the same time. Here are the two things that I love about TickPick above all else. Number one, they do not charge service fees. So you try to buy tickets for a sporting event. You see the price for the tickets. You look, you're like, oh, great, it's $20 for a ticket. You go to check out and you realize that they are charging you an extra $15, $20 per ticket. Those are service fees. TickPick does not do that. They have saved their users over $55 million. The second thing is that they guarantee you the best prices to any NFL game. What that means is if you find a better price for a ticket on another site, they're going to guarantee you and pay you 110% of that price. Okay. That's a full-on guarantee. And again, $55 million. Okay. Just to be clear, that's what they've saved by not charging service fees. And now they have teamed up with Zip. That allows you to buy now, but pay later for your tickets. Okay. All you got to do is choose Zip at checkout when you're buying your ticket. You can split your ticket purchase into four installments. Just download the TickPick app, use the code PROS for $10 off your first order when you select Zip at checkout. Again, that's code PROS, $10 off your first order when you download the TickPick app and select Zip at checkout. All right, Pat, let's get to our next game. Colts 27, Dolphins 17. Jonathan Taylor, very solid here as we expected. 6 for 103 and a score, plus 3 for 31 through the air. But meanwhile, Marlon Mack gets 10 carries for 22 yards, which I did not see coming, which means Nyheim Hines, 2 carries for 6 yards on the ground, catches both of his targets for 5 yards through the air, but he does lose a fumble. I mean, Nyheim Hines is a guy who I've never felt comfortable starting because I feel like the good games are always followed by bad games. Do you think he needs to be rostered at this point?
Probably not. Maybe in a PPR league. As you mentioned, like vagaries of game script are going to affect Robbie pretty severely. And in a game script like this one with the Colts ahead, there wasn't much for Hines to do. And Mack winds up getting the extra work. You know, with the big lead late, kind of trying to preserve Taylor a little bit. Yep. So I guess we can expect probably more negative game scripts for the Colts the rest of the way than positive. So maybe that might preserve Hines' value somewhat in PPR leagues. But, you know, in a standard league, you're certainly not keeping him around, maybe not even in a half point PPR. Probably better things you can do with the roster spot, because I don't know how good you're ever going to feel about starting Nyheim Hines. There's no 18 or 20 point smash week where you're like loving the matchup and thinking that he is going to get big points for you. You're just hoping you fall, you know, backwards into 13 or 14 PPR points.
Right. And obviously last year you would have the couple of monstrous games that came out of nowhere, but you never knew when they were going to come and when they weren't. And part of it is, look, the receivers are getting a little more targeted. We saw last week with Michael Pittman Jr. This week, 8 targets, 6 catches, 59 yards. Zach Pascal, 5 targets, 4 catches, 44 yards. Just, I've got to say it because he had a big game. Mo Alie-Cox, 5 targets, 3 catches, 42 yards and 2 touchdowns. You're not considering him at tight end, are you?
No.
Okay. That's good. Don't have to elaborate. For the Dolphins, it's ugly here. Jacoby Brissett does throw 2 touchdown passes, 1 to Devontae Parker, who has 9 targets, 4 catches, 77 yards, 1 to Mike Gesicki, 6 targets, 5 catches, 57 yards, and a touchdown. But Myles Gaskin here. Now, Pat, we do this Sunday night. I have not always seen all the snap counts or got all the reports or anything like that. But Myles Gaskin, 2 carries, 3 yards, and that's it. Malcolm Brown had 8 carries for 23 yards, plus a catch for 14. Savon Ahmed, three carries for 1 yard, plus 2 targets, catched both of them for 12 yards. I didn't think he got hurt. I didn't see he got hurt. Assuming he's not hurt, are we just off the Dolphins running backs here after this?
Yeah, I want to see what the snap count look like for Gaskin, because he had been at around 50% of the snap share. And although that doesn't sound like it's great, it was enough to make him the lead back and at least give him like running back 3 or flex type value. I can't wait to see what it looked like. It felt like Malcolm Brown was playing more snaps based on, you know, I was watching multiple games at a time, but it seemed like I caught Malcolm Brown in the backfield a lot more than Gaskin. And this is going to move him down for sure. Let's just say
I've got it. You ready? Yeah. And again, this is the very quick and dirty. I'm sure it's not official, but Nathan Yonke tweets them out from Pro Football Focus. 35 snaps for Malcolm Brown, 12 for Myles Gaskin.
Wow.
And 5 for Savon Ahmed. I mean, assuming this is no injury, how can you ever feel comfortable starting Myles Gaskin again? Because at the very least, Pat, what he was a low ceiling, high floor kind of guy, because you knew he'd probably get 4 targets, you know, maybe 4 catches, or he'd get 10 to 15 touches. If this is true and they just didn't like how he looked after 2 carries, how can we ever feel comfortable with this absent injury, don't you think?
Yeah, and do you remember, Dan, that second Dolphins preseason game where they started Malcolm Brown, and it was like a big
yes.
A lot of people were.
I think it was the first one. It was, because I jumped off the, I entirely jumped off the Myles Gaskin train, and Yates teased me mercilessly. When then in the second he popped back and was like, fine. But I remember he was barely involved in that game.
Yeah, and then they opened the season with Gaskin kind of back in the old role, and it's all seemed like that was this big head fake, but maybe it wasn't now. So, yes, you can't touch anyone in this backfield.
I'm so angry at this. Meanwhile, Will Fuller banged up, leaves early with a hand injury, and, you know, Jaylen Waddle, he gets three catches like right out of the gate, yeah, and then nothing else, right? Four targets, three catches, 33 yards. How about Waddle, a guy who I feel like is kind of this flex option each and every week, but not sure how reliable he is.
That's kind of it. Like, he's in that flex range. I think he's probably going to be someone we're starting in the weeks to come, because we have the buys about to hit. The injuries are continuing to pile up. Gesicki is the one that interests me, Dan. Like, I did not think he was going to have value when, you know, now Fuller is hurt. But ever since they got their three receivers back and had them playing together, Gesicki's been strangely valuable. Like, yes. I thought that was going to take him out of it, because we've seen the Dolphins don't always want to play Gesicki over like Durham Smythe, who's a better blocker and maybe helps get their running game going.
Yep.
But yeah, Gesicki has been very involved the last couple of weeks, and I guess we do have to include him now as a tight end one for sure.
I mean, there are just so many guys right now. And I think, look, he's, you know, he started out completely uninvolved, and now he's been involved a little bit here for a couple of weeks. So I agree, it is somebody that you have to start considering at this point. This was a really ugly one. The Browns 14, the Vikings 7. I mean, the running backs do what you kind of need them to do. Nick Chubb 21 for 100, one catch for 5 yards. Kareem Hunt 14 for 69 on the ground. Looks good again with the score. Four targets, two catches, 17 yards. I was really optimistic on Odell Beckham Jr. here, and seven targets, just two catches, 27 yards. This was about as bad as I've ever seen Baker Mayfield look in a, right? I mean, I don't know about you. Like, he's always just solid, pretty accurate. He was missing throws constantly at this one, and he and Beckham just seem off. I mean, are you discouraged by the fact that Beckham had such a bad game here, or is this more on Mayfield?
I think it's more on Mayfield. I mean, there was a play, Dan, with just over a minute to go, yes, where the Browns would have been the dagger for the game. It was a play action. Beckham was just wide open. No defender within 5, 6, 7 yards of him. And Mayfield just threw it totally behind him. Yep. Completely uncatchable. So it easily could have been a better game for OBJ. I think we just have to chalk it up to a terrible game for both quarterbacks. It was just some of the worst quarterbacking you've ever seen. Like, Cousins forcing the ball constantly, having no feel for the pass rush, Mayfield just missing open guys, especially the benefit Mayfield gets of having that running game and the opportunities it creates for him. And sometimes it's receivers literally wide open with no one around, and he was missing those guys.
Yeah,
it was ugly. Ugly.
Just bizarre, but ugly. You're right, for Minnesota again. And I think, you know, maybe we just have to credit the Cleveland defense right now, especially with that pass rush for sure. Dalvin Cook, he gets banged up, but I mean, I was watching in and out. It looked like he came back in and he was in sort of towards the end of the game anyway. So I'm not really sure, but only 9 for 34. He had 6 targets, 2 catches for 10 yards through the air. Alexander Mattison can't do much in relief. Just 10 carries, 20 yards. Really, again, the Browns defense just kind of shut him down. Cousins was terrible, 203 yards passing. He does get the early touchdown to Justin Jefferson, who totals 84 yards. Adam Thielen, 8 targets, 3 catches, 46 yards. KJ Osborne and Tyler Conklin, pretty quiet. To me, Pat, I don't know about you, I'm kind of just writing this entire performance off for the Minnesota offense, whether it was just a bad day or a really tough Browns defense, but I'm not really taking anything away on any side of this from the Vikings offense. Are you?
Just that maybe we should start breaking ties in favor of whichever guy's not playing against the Browns. Like, yeah, the Browns are, maybe you want to sit that guy if it's a tough call. Like, the Browns might be an influential defense in some of our fantasy matchups now.
I think that's a good call, because they are. They have looked great all season long. Yep. Giants 27, Saints 21. This is a game, Pat, we talked about in the betting pros. This is one of my things. I thought that the Giants would be able to keep this one close. They did. Really good game. Everybody sort of had their coming out party for the Giants. Daniel Jones, 402 yards passing with 2 touchdowns. Saquon Barkley, 13 for 52 on the ground with a score. 5 catches, 74 yards with a score through the air. Kenny Golladay got involved. 7 targets, 6 catches, 116 yards. Kadarius Toney got involved. 9 targets, 6 catches, 78 yards. There was a John Ross sighting, 3 catches, 77 yards, and a touchdown. Obviously, no Sterling Shepard and no Darius Slayton here. But, I mean, do you have any takeaways here from the fact that, you know, all these guys kind of had huge games in this one?
Well, I think this really has to be deflating for the Sterling Shepard investors who thought they had a gem on their hands. And all of a sudden, Kadarius Toney comes in and has this game where he looks really good. And, you know, all the explosiveness that he showed in college was evident here, showed good hands. You know, he kind of had that star-crossed training camp like Odell Beckham had his rookie year, where Odell had the hamstring injury and we thought it was going to be a lost rookie year. Was it COVID for Toney? He missed time with, I think, COVID, maybe something else. And he just looked fantastic. So I don't know what to make of this receiver core going forward, Dan. Like, I don't know if we're going to see Shepard start losing targets to or snaps to Toney. I think that's possible. I've been a Golladay fan. It stunk that he didn't get training camp time to bond with Daniel Jones, but he's kind of getting that now and forced to play this bigger role because of the injuries to the other pass catchers. And now he's starting to click. And this was a guy who carried an enormous load in Detroit. So I think he's a guy who a lot of people have not been using, been very cautious with, and a guy they're going to have to start considering in, you know, as a starter every week now, maybe.
Golladay is the guy who sticks out to me. And I was lower on him than you were coming in, Pat. Not this week. I don't know what your rankings were this week, but rest of season item 41. This was sort of the game I wanted to see, the big game, because again, he's been injured. He's been banged up a lot. And you're right. He didn't get time to sort of, you know, have any practice time in camp and stuff like that. Like you said, I think he's gotten it here. And I think he's showing a bit more of a connection right now with Daniel Jones. So I'm very optimistic on Golladay, a guy who people were, when he first got traded and people first started doing rankings, was more like a borderline wide receiver too when they started working it out. So very optimistic on Golladay. I'd be very excited if I rostered him. For the Saints, Alvin Kamara, 26 for 120 on the ground. That's great, but 0 targets. I mean, his targets by year, Pat, 100, 105, 97, 107. This year, he is on pace for 60. What are your thoughts about, I mean, can Kamara survive and be this elite back if he's not going to get targeted as much?
Not elite. And he is going to shatter his previous high in carries, which was, I forget what it was. I don't think he's broken 200 carries in a season before. Is that right? It is a bizarre shift in his role where he is not getting this passing game work, but he's getting just this ramped up carry volume. You wonder if it inflates the injury risk at all. He's getting more of these traffic carries and less touches in space where he, you know, doesn't have to deal with as many defensive bodies falling on top of him. So I'm a little worried about that. And, you know, we just know that a carry is not as valuable as a target is in fantasy football. So I think it's a really hard path for him to have that high end running back one value. You can't hate 26 carries a game or 24 carries, these big pumped up carry totals. But yeah, the lack of usage in the passing game is very disheartening.
Yeah, he had 194, it looks like, was his career high. 194 carries is his career high. So he's going to shatter that. I think he might be on pace for like 300 at this point. So it's a little crazy. But yeah, I agree. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know whether or not this is going to stick because obviously the offense hasn't really looked good. Like, obviously they've won a couple of games here, but it hasn't really looked like it clicked. And maybe that's a reason why. Meanwhile, James Winston throws for 226 and a score to Juwan Johnson. Taysom Hill runs for 2 touchdowns. Marquez Callaway here, just 2 targets. Catches both of them, 74 yards. Is your opinion of Marquez Callaway after this game higher, lower, or the same than it was coming in?
I think it's lower. I just don't think you can use any Saints pass catcher. Dan. Mm-hmm. I mean, the volume, the way they want to play is just to not pass the ball that much. And they've got a variety of targets they can spread 20 pass attempts to in a game.
Yep, I agree. I completely agree. Let's go to the Jets 27, Titans 24. This was a game, Pat, you and I talked about in the Betting Pros show. We both liked it with the spread, but we said, and you said in particular, like, it's worth a sprinkle on the money line. You thought the Jets had a chance in this game, and they did. Corey Davis, his revenge game, as we mentioned, 7 targets, 4 catches, 111 yards, and the touchdowns. Do you think that, you know, he gets 7 targets a game? Obviously, we've got when Elijah Moore comes back, the matchups are a little easier. Jamison Crowder there. Do you think he's fully in your circle of trust now?
He is. He is. And I think he's in Zach Wilson's circle of trust.
For sure. For sure. I agree. He's just a locked and loaded starter. I mean, maybe, wide receiver 3, whatever, but he's still a guy who definitely is going to get the targets. And I do think now, again, we talked about like the matchups were so tough to start the season. I feel like we kind of wrote that off. I think it's going to be enough here to make him a guy who you can relax and just put in your lineup. What about Michael Carter? I mean, you've got Tevin Coleman and Ty Johnson combining for 7 carries for 15 yards. Michael Carter, 13 for 38. And a touchdown on the ground. Do you think he can be started as like a borderline flex option, or is he still a bench wait to see later in the season?
He's mini Alvin Kamara, Dan. He's not getting that passing game usage. No targets today, I believe.
Yeah.
So that's really frustrating. And I mean, that was something that he was good at in college. And we hope that was going to be his role, like sort of be, to be used in this DeAndre Swift type role. And we're just not getting that. So no, I don't think you can trust him. Plus we saw a little bit of Ty Johnson and Tevin Coleman mixed in. Tevin Coleman actually looked good on his few carries today.
He did. And again, and Ty Johnson got the targets. So I think he's probably worth rostering at this point, though. I do think he's worth rostering and holding on your bench for a while. But I agree. I mean, it's good to see him getting the lion's share of the work, but I agree with you that I don't think you can start him yet. Derrick Henry, you knew without AJ Brown and Julio Jones that this was going to be a Derrick Henry game, and you got 35 touches for 177 yards and a touchdown. Ryan Tannehill did what he could, but with no receivers, there wasn't much. I mean, Cameron Batson catches the lone touchdown. Jerry McNichols is your leading receiver with 12 targets, 8 catches, 74 yards. Chester Rogers, 5 for 63. Josh Reynolds, 6 for 59. Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, 8 targets, 3 catches, 29 yards. Even against Jacksonville, Pat, there's no reason to look for anybody other than really Derrick Henry if Julio Jones and AJ Brown are both out, right?
Correct. We were wondering who was going to pick up the slack, and we figured it would, I think a lot of the money seemed to be on Westbrook-Ikhina, and it wound up being Jeremy McNichols. That was not where the money was being put on who was going to pick up the slack in the passing game. So no, I think we can ignore these guys even against Jacksonville.
Completely agree. Chiefs 42, Eagles 30. So much for the Tyreek Hill concerns. If there were any, 12 targets, 11 catches, 186 yards, and 3 touchdowns. He is very good, as is Patrick Mahomes. 5 touchdown passes. 3 of them do go to Tyreek Hill. 1 to Jody Fortson, of course, as everybody expected. 1 to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. 16 touches, 114 yards. Are we fully trusting Clyde Edwards-Helaire, even though, you know, Darrell Williams got the goal line carry here and the touchdown?
I think we're not fully trusting him, but we're starting him every week. And we've just seen enough letdown games from him where not quite in the circle of trust, but he still plays in this explosive offense. Doesn't get the usage in the passing game we'd like to see, but he is pretty much the bread and butter runner. And the other thing we can't be happy with, Dan, is that he does not get those money targets in the green zone. We saw, Darrell Williams punching a short one today. So, we're just going to have to live with the flaws. But as the primary running back in one of the most explosive offenses in the league, if not the most explosive, we'll take it.
Yeah.
I'm running back too.
Yeah. You take it. And again, he got the touchdown here in the little flip, that they got here. And, but I agree, but you got to live with it. Certainly better, once you get to that range, it gets pretty ugly pretty quickly. So certainly Edwards-Helaire is somebody you like. The rare bad game from Travis Kelce, 6 targets, 4 catches, 23 yards. All fantasy managers except my 8-year-old son forgive him very quickly. For the Eagles, I guess we're just abandoning the run. Miles Sanders, 7 for 13 on the ground, all 3 of his targets for 34 yards through the air. I mean, Kenneth Gainwell runs for the touchdown and he winds up with 9 touches, 89 yards. I mean, can you trust anyone in this backfield here for the Eagles?
Oh, man, it's so frustrating. So Sanders gets no third down usage at all whatsoever. And they really are not looking to throw to him on early downs either. And Gainwell is this terrific dynamic satellite back, this third down back, but that's exclusively his role. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you can use these guys. Like, yep. Gainwell just doesn't, like, it's not a meaty enough role to be dependable. And Sanders, you can maybe use him as like a flex guy, but like, you're just wanting more from that role. And, you know, 3 carries last week for the running backs, 10 this week. Like, man, this is just not a, not a great situation for this backfield.
And I don't understand why. Like, what? I feel like this sudden shift. They look so good in the beginning, you know, of the year, and then I don't really know. But regardless, you're probably pretty encouraged with pretty much everybody else. At least Jalen Hurts, 387 yards and 2 touchdowns, plus 8 for 47 on the ground. It's always just the 35 to 50 yards on the ground, just there, like, you know, makes you pretty solid with that floor. Devontae Smith. This is a game again, who I said I probably wasn't going to start Devontae Smith. I mean, I had him ranked as a wide receiver 3, but I didn't really want to start there. I wanted to see it happen against a very exploitable defense, and it did. 10 targets, 7 catches, 122 yards. Dallas Goedert, all 5 of his targets for 56 yards in the score. And Zach Ertz gets involved, 8 targets, 6 catches, 60 yards. Any commentary on the Eagles at all, other than what we talked about?
If we're losing something in the running game, maybe it's being gained in the passing game. And if we can't trust the running backs, we can at least trust Devonta Smith for sure, and maybe both tight ends. They're kind of 2 and 3 as far as the passing game options here, and there seems to be enough volume for both of these guys. Like, we thought it was going to be a takeoff for Dallas Goedert when the inevitable Zach Ertz trade happened, except it never happened.
Right.
But Goddard's still all of a sudden playing really well, and you know, I think clearly inside the tight end 1 cut line right now.
For sure. I mean, I do think too with Ertz that this is surprising to me. I viewed Ertz as like a guy in a really, really deep league. He might not be a bad tight end, quote unquote, handcuff, right? If something happens to Goddard, but he's providing value on his own. So I agree with you on Goddard. It's been nice to see that he can produce even with Ertz still there. Cardinals 37, Rams 20. We talked about Chase Edmonds, but again, the 2 touchdowns for James Conner, 18 for 50 yards on the ground, plus catches. Both of his targets for 16 yards through the air. I mean, it's game script dependent, obviously, and he's not going to get all the goal line work because some of that's going to go to Kyler Murray. But where, just general thoughts on him going forward.
On Connor?
Yes.
Like running back 4, low end running back 3. Like, I don't think a guy you want to use unless you've got injury or bye week problems. It's just, you know, too game script dependent. I know the Cardinals are going to be in a lot of favorable game scripts. They're a really good team, but there's just not enough of a role for you to really count on him. Like, I think if you have to put him into your lineup, you're kind of crossing your fingers.
Yep. Meanwhile, Kyler Murray throws 2 touchdown passes, 1 to AJ Green, 67 yards receiving, 1 to Max Williams, 66 yards receiving with the score. But I feel like things are so spread out right now in this offense. DeAndre Hopkins, 7 targets, 4 catches, 67 yards. It was a tough matchup, of course, against the Rams. Rondale Moore, 3 targets, catches all of them for 28 yards. Christian Kirk, only 1 target, catches it for 5 yards. I know a lot of people were really jumping on Christian Kirk, and I kind of started to as well. But I'm kind of the opinion right now that in this passing game, the only guy I really feel comfortable relying on is DeAndre Hopkins. And everybody else is more just kind of going to be this bye week bench filler. What do you think?
Agree with you, Dan. And part of it is that I was, writing off AJ Green. I think I had him ranked wide receiver 157 or something going into the season. Pretty much thought he was toast and might have been completely wrong about that. Like he... he's not creating the separation he used to, but he is still good at the catch points. That was always one of his strengths, and he's still pretty good at that. And he's, if not fantasy viable, he's at least viable in that offense and,
right,
you know, important to the Cardinals right now. So, very unpredictable beyond Hopkins.
Yep. I agree. For the Rams, really nice game from Darrell Henderson here, 14 for 89 on the ground, 6 targets, 5 catches, 27 yards through the air. Sony Michel just 3 carries for 11 yards. He also loses a fumble. So that was nice to see. I was a little worried that you had the potential for Henderson to take like a really bad shot in the ribs and get knocked out. So great to see him coming through here all the way pretty much through the end of the game. Matthew Stafford throws for 280 and 2 scores with a pick. One of the scores goes to the leading receiver on the day, who is Van Jefferson. 6 targets, 6 catches, 90 yards. 1 to Robert Woods again at the very end of the game, saves his game, but just 6 targets, 4 catches, 48 yards. Let's talk about Woods for 1 second. Again, last second touchdown. The game's pretty much over. It doesn't really matter. I mean, good for fantasy, but I mean, is there any, can you give fantasy managers any reason to be optimistic on what we might see from Woods going forward?
I really can't. We have seen this target gap between Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods pretty much every game so far with the new Matthew Stafford Rams. So I don't know if we can expect anything close to the return where they were basically co-equals in the offense. At this point, Robert Woods is what, Dan, like a low-end wide receiver 3? Does that sound about right?
It does. Yeah, absolutely. Hold on. I'm going to pull up exactly. I should have had this ready to go, but I'm going to pull up where we had him ranked. Yeah, I mean, you had him 29th already, Pat, rest of season. I had him 23rd. So I was like holding on with like a vice grip and saying, this will turn. This will turn. I can feel it. I don't see it turning right now, like at all. Yeah. Like this was a matchup that I wanted to see it happen in. It didn't. It's very concerning. So yes, still a wide receiver 3, just because we've seen what it can be, especially in this offense. But higher than that, I cannot go at this point. You mentioned Kupp, who again, doesn't have a good fantasy day, but has 13 targets, just 5 catches, 64 yards. But the 13 targets, that's what it's going to be like. Woods has to close that gap if he's going to be viable. Seahawks 28, 49ers 21. The big one here is that Jimmy G, of course, was knocked out earlier. He didn't come out of halftime, at least, after a calf injury. And he spoke after the game and he said that he is expecting to miss at least a couple of weeks. So I think we can assume it's going to be Trey Lance going forward for at least the short term, probably the long term if he can play well. He looks raw today when I was watching, you know, not polished or anything like that, but decent, you know, 9 for 18, 157 yards, 2 touchdowns. He also adds the 41 yards rushing. With Arizona ranked, with Arizona up next, where do you think you'll have him ranked as a starting quarterback?
Probably high end quarterback 2 range. You have to respect the running. And I think knowing that he's going to be their quarterback, they're going to put more in for him where they do some design runs rather than just sort of the organic running around and scrambling for yards. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what it does to the viability of Brandon Ayuk. I think it might just destroy his usability.
Yeah.
I think it maybe lowers the ceiling a little bit for Debo, although
huge game here. Right?
Yeah.
12 targets, 8 catches, 156 yards with both touchdowns.
What about you? Are you a little less enthusiastic though with Debo with Trey Lance than with Jimmy?
I would say slightly. I mean, I agree with you and your point is well taken, but I do think that what we're seeing from Debo, frankly, is not what I expected. I love Debo, everything like that, but I really, really thought that Brandon Ayuk, especially with, you know, George Kittle getting targets, but not being like an integral part of the offense at this point, just he hasn't produced yet, whether it be injury, whatever it is, that I kind of just figured Ayuk, who I really, really like Brandon Ayuk as a talent, I thought he would claw his way back into it, but the fact is he's not. And if you're going to get this many targets like you're getting with Debo Samuel, it's hard for me to be off him. At the same time, I agree with you. Generally speaking, I like Garoppolo is a better fit to me for what we would see from Debo. But I still think, I mean, it's really hard for me. And again, this was another guy. This would be a great, I'm confused by your opinion, sir, if you were the host, because I was lower on Debo coming into the week, not this week, but I mean, rest of season by 5 spots than you were. So you had him 19th, I had him 24th. For me, I feel like that he'll move up a couple spots. But I agree that he would probably move up further if it was Jimmy G.
We should note, Dan, for anyone who didn't see this game, that on one of Debo's touchdowns, Seattle bungled the coverage so badly that Debo actually made a sandwich while the ball was in the air and then ate half of it and caught the ball and went in for a touchdown.
So it all counts, baby. It all counts. No, it's all good. But yes, it's a fair point. Meanwhile, I was impressed. I don't know about you. I thought Trey Sermon looked great in this game when I saw him. I mean, 19 for 89 yards on the ground. When Elijah Mitchell is healthy, because Elijah Mitchell was not active for this game, how do you see this backfield breaking down?
I think Sermon needed this game to get a foothold and make that a committee instead of just the, you know, Mitchell being the lead guy and Sermon being the backup. Now I think we're probably going to see some sort of committee split. I don't know what it's going to look like, though, Dan. It's going to be really hard to rank those guys this coming week, I think. Yeah. And they're probably going to be within five spots of each other.
Yep, I agree with that for sure. And again, I had certainly had Mitchell as the higher ranked running back before it was scratched or before we found out that he likely wasn't going to play. But I agree. I think to say Trey Sermon needed this game is the perfect way to put it, because he really did. And at this point, obviously, no matter what, like, Sermon is someone who needs to remain on fantasy rosters, whereas I think that his roster position was pretty tenuous given everything that had happened. For Seattle, Russell Wilson, good. I mean, just 149 yards passing, but two touchdowns plus one on the ground. DK Metcalf catches one of the scores, 65 yards and a touchdown. Two disappointments, though. One is Chris Carson, 13 for 30 plus a catch for 1 yard. And Alex Collins, meanwhile, comes in 10 carries, 44 yards and a touchdown, two catches for 34 yards. So I was watching this game, but I was in and out a little bit of it. Were they managing Carson because of the minor hammy injury that he had last time? Was it just that Collins was more effective, or do you know?
I don't know if they were managing him with injury, but I know Collins looked like he had more juice than Carson in this game. That was kind of undeniable. It was yep. fun to see the river dance again, Dan,
of course,
by the way.
Of course, yes, always.
So, yeah, I think Carson owners have to be nervous about this one. You know, is he going to be more of a low end running back two going forward than the rock solid running back two we thought he was going to be?
Right.
You know, because if this turns into a committee situation, which we have not seen in Seattle pretty much during the entirety of the Chris Carson era.
We saw it for like the two games where Rashad Penny looked like he was busting out. Right.
Yes.
And then we saw it, and there was room for both when that happened, because but this is not the same. I mean, Carson right now, I don't know. He was fine. He obviously had a good game last week. I don't know, man. I'm a little worried right now again. And you're certainly right. Like, when you watch both of them, right? Carson, you use the word juice. That's the correct word. Like, Collins had juice, you know, he was explosive when he ran, and Carson didn't seem it. So again, I don't know if they were trying to be careful with them. And again, the game was not salted away, but, you know, pretty much well in hand late in the game, especially. But I do think that this is something I'm a little worried about with if I am someone rostering Carson. How about Lockett? Again, another down game here for him, five targets, four catches, 24 yards. I know fantasy managers are thinking, I've seen this, you know, this show before. This was last year where he'd have these monstrous games and then he'd disappear. Do you think that's what we're seeing right now? Is he still going to be inconsistent?
I'm hoping it was just injury related, Dan. I mean, we knew he was dealing with an injury coming into this week. There was never any real concern. It seemed that he would miss the game, but maybe it was bothering him a little more than he let on. But again, we're also seeing pretty low volume, pass volume with Seattle. In the first couple of weeks, it was because they were being so efficient. Like, they were scoring these long touchdowns. We got those with Lockett scoring three of them and scoring quickly and just kind of not holding the ball much. But now it was like more of the running game this week. So I can't say that they're really letting Russ cook right now. We're seeing him, you know, cook maybe 20 to 25 pass attempts a game. So that certainly didn't help Lockett today. So,
and the problem, Pat, honestly, the problem that I have is that this is what I worried about, which is they're going to lose a couple of games and they're going to say, you know, I don't really want to do this anymore. I want to go back to what has made us a successful team in our minds, which is to, you know, play it conservative, run the ball a lot, like not go crazy with the pass. I really think that that is what's going to happen going forward. I don't think that's Pete Carroll. And I said this coming in, man, the dude is 70 years old. Do you think Pete Carroll is going to come in at this point and be like, you know what I'm going to do? Let's get wild and crazy. He might want to try it for like 5 minutes. But then when things go south, he's going to want to go back. And I think that's what's happening here. And I am concerned about this for Lockett, because I think you're right. We looked in the beginning and the change in offense, like, this is perfect for Lockett. This could be a big year. And now I think it's just going to kind of be the same old with him being a little inconsistent. Still a guy who you're probably starting every week, because again, you can have such giant games. But I do think that the consistency part of it is probably not going to be there. I actually forgot to put in the final score of the Ravens-Broncos game, but I know the Ravens won. I will look it up in a second. But Tyson Williams, a surprise inactive here. I was shocked by this. He was the running back who I had ranked highest, at least on the Ravens. Not like I was all that excited. But Latavius Murray leading the way, 18 carries, 59 yards with the touchdown. Le'Veon Bell, 4 carries for 11 yards. Devonta Freeman, 1 carry for 4 yards. Who among the Baltimore running backs is worth rostering at this point?
Looks like Latavius is their guy. And I think I wrote in my notes early on, like, Latavius Murray is the guy? Question mark, question mark. Because he didn't look like he looked kind of slow early on, but then he picked up steam a little and he was playing sort of that effective role. And, you know, maybe he can be what Gus Edwards was supposed to be for them this year. You know, the Tyson scratch is not a good sign for his value going forward. And I think at some point the announcers said that, you know, the Ravens coaches had tried to downplay that and, it's problematic for sure.
And Le'Veon Bell and Devonta Freeman are useless. Like from a fantasy perspective, right? And from a real life perspective, Latavius Murray still had juice, as we will say that word a couple of times. Like he was productive last year. He's a guy again, but Le'Veon Bell, it's been a couple of years since we've seen him be something that looks like it could help an NFL football team. Same thing with Devonta Freeman. Williams must be really bad in practice or something for him to not be here, but I agree. It's Latavius and ignore everybody else at this point. And, you know, Murray was fine, not great, but fine in a tough matchup, admittedly, in Denver. Lamar Jackson, meanwhile, 316 yards passing and a score to Hollywood Brown, makes up for last week. 5 targets, 4 catches, 91 yards and the touchdown. You know, there was a lot of talk about Rashad Bateman. I think Hollywood Brown is the guy. Like, I'm very happy that Rashad Bateman's going to come back at some point soon. And Sammy Watkins, but I don't know. To me, Hollywood Brown is a just locked and loaded, probably high-end wide receiver 3 for me, but what do you think of him rest of season?
I kind of echo your enthusiasm for him just because I think he can do quite a bit with not that many targets. Like he does not need giant target totals to go over in a given week. We like that about him, and I think that's probably not going to change when Bateman comes back. Yep. I did worry about Brown's value with the Bateman dynamic, and that kind of caused me to probably rank Brown lower than I should have going into the season and, you know, not really have him in any of my leagues. But, he looks really good. He's looked, other than those drops in the Detroit game, he's looked fantastic this year. So I do not think Bateman is going to shake the apple cart too much for Marquise Brown.
I agree. Mark Andrews, meanwhile, perfectly fine game. 8 targets, 5 catches, 67 yards for the Broncos. Teddy Bridgewater knocked out of this game with a concussion. He did throw a touchdown pass to Noah Fant before he left, but it's pretty much all bad. Drew Lock looks very bad. The running backs were fine. 9 for 56 for Gordon on the ground, 7 for 48. For Williams, plus they both had 11 yards receiving. That's fine, but Cortland Sutton is your leading receiver with 47 yards. I mean, I don't really know whether there's a lot to take away here considering it was Drew Lock and it's a concussion, so we don't know how long it's going to roll. But I guess maybe the question is, against Pittsburgh next week, if it's Drew Lock, are you starting Cortland Sutton or Tim Patrick?
No, yep. Not if I can help it.
Yep. I agree. You got to avoid him. I mean, Locke looked really bad. And I remember there was like the preseason game or the first preseason game where he looked awesome. And it was like, wow, maybe he's really turned a corner. Did not look that way in this game. No. Final game, your Packers 27, Steelers 17. What do we make of the fact that AJ Dillon had 15 carries for 81 yards and Aaron Jones had 15 carries for 48 yards? He did have 3 catches for 51 yards, but they both had the same carries. Was this just them salting the game away here? And so giving the quote unquote backup more work or what?
Favorable game script throughout. I mean, they did introduce Dillon into the game early and he was playing well. Like he ran well, he caught a pass very smoothly, turned it up for a short little gain. Just he looked good and they had been working Aaron Jones pretty hard. So I think this was a good time to mix it up and divide things more of a 50-50 split because we had not even been seeing Dillon used in that same Jamal Williams role from last year. Like we had been seeing Aaron Jones get a much bigger role than he had last year. So I think it was a good opportunity for the Packers to give ease back the throttle on Jones in a game they led fairly comfortably throughout. So I think it was just kind of the script, but they still like Dylan, I guess. That's maybe the takeaway. He wasn't used all that much the first 3 weeks, but they used him much more here and he looked good.
So. Yeah, he did. He really looked good. Rodgers throws the 2 touchdown passes, as we said, to Randall Cobb. Davante Adams, kind of quiet, 11 targets, 6 catches, 64 yards. But is there any reason for us to be rostering Robert Tonyan anymore? 7 targets, 2 catches, 8 yards.
I don't think so. He was just the efficiency machine last year, catching touchdowns on, what, 21% of his catches or whatever, and having the 89% catch rates. Those numbers just weren't going to stick. And, you know, he sees targets in this offense, but not enough to make him a week-to-week starter.
Yep, I agree. For the Steelers, I feel like you could flip on any Steelers game and it looks exactly the same every single time. It's just Ben kind of trying not to get absolutely pancaked back there and then just getting the ball out wherever he can and not going particularly downfield. But there is still fantasy production. Najee Harris, 15 carries, 62 yards in the score, plus 7 targets, 6 catches, 29 yards. That will always prop up his value. Deontay Johnson, this is just what you're going to get. 13 targets, 9 catches, 92 yards. How about Juju Smith-Schuster, though? There's no Chase Claypool. It should be something. You had injuries, obviously, that happened in the Green Bay secondary. 8 targets, 2 catches, 11 yards. Talk to me about Juju Smith-Schuster.
I think he's droppable in most leagues, Dan. I hate to say it, but there's just nothing left for him with Najee getting the bulk, not the bulk, but like enough of these short area targets that like that was Juju's thing last year. I don't see the value. Like he gets no high value targets, none.
Yep.
And Dan, by the way, Dan, about Ben, we got to talk about this near the end of the game. The Steelers, as they're trying to fight their way back into the game down like 27-10 or whatever, they have 2 fourth down situations.
And I think it's like, right. I think this is correct, by the way. I would have done this if I were a quarterback too, but sure, go ahead. I know where you're going.
Big Ben throws nowhere near the sticks. And it's not like to an open receiver who might have a chance to turn up and maybe beat a tackle or two. He throws to well-covered guys, guys with defenders right in their hip pocket, like 5 yards short of the stick. I mean, one, I think, was to Najee and Jair, like belts him right away. And another was to Juju, who heroically tried to stretch to the, he would have needed to be 16 feet tall to reach past the stripe, Dan.
I feel like those were like, I've bet the over on my completions, so I've got to make sure I get it, even though I have no chance to actually get the first one. You're right. It was maddening. And, you know, when the broadcasters can't even like remotely try to make an excuse for those plays, then, you know, it's bad. But yeah, this is just ugly, man. And again, we've talked about this a little bit off air. We've talked about another podcast. I almost feel bad for Ben. Like he just looks like miserable out there and like they've got absolutely nothing. But
he had that great throw to Deontay for the touchdown, just a dart. Yep. And then like the rest of the game was just,
I know he missed that other one. Gruesome. To Juju. I think just bad anyway, but well, this was not gruesome, Pat. This was great to talk to you as usual here on Sunday nights. That's going to do it for today's show. Thank you to Kraken. Go to kraken.com/fantasypros or search for Kraken in the app. Find out for yourself why it's been one of the highest rated places to buy crypto for the last 10 years. Thanks also to TickPick. Remember, download the app, use the code PROS, get $10 off your first order when you select Zip at checkout. As always, we will be back tomorrow talking about waiver wires. We'll talk to you then.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A rested child is a happy child. Sleep Tight Stories is a weekly podcast that brings comfort and joy to families worldwide with calming bedtime stories. The stories are relevant to children and spark wonder without overstimulation, so they can fall asleep and stay asleep. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. For a bedtime routine you'll miss when they're grown, Sleep Tight Stories.